Gaming on the Frontier. This is Bruce.
This is Trav.
And this is Jonathan.
Welcome to Gaming on the Frontier, your podcast of finding out whether you're Buck Rogers or who's the pirate.
Well, there's Han Solo. There's Captain Malcolm Reynolds.
No, there were Black Bart, Black something. Oh. Yeah. Anyways, welcome to Gaming on the Frontier. This week we're doing something a little different. We decided that we wanted to basically entertain ourselves when we're not doing this podcast, amongst all the other games that we're doing, and we dragooned Jonathan into being our GM. And we said we want to do a space game, but of course, being who we are and what this show's about, of course, it can't be like a product, you know, a game that's already published. No. We have to create at the very least, our own setting. Okay, so this is the Gaming on the Frontier space adventure game, you know, for want of a much, much better name for it, which we'll work on.
And there is no title yet.
Right. So it's going to be Trav and I and whoever else he may get to be in it. Jonathan as our GM.
Oh, we get to bring people. Okay, all righty.
Well, yes, only if they're, like, decent, okay? We don't want any of your...
Hey, whoa.
None of your low-class players.
Y'all are witnesses. That was attempted character assassination here. Yeah. Wow.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't want to invite any of the people I game with.
Well...
They're listening. Some are actually listening to this podcast, so you know who you are.
I will put it out there, and what's the old saying? We'll run it up the flagpole and see who salutes. Yeah.
Well, the most important thing is that we hold a high standard for gaming, and we hold it amongst ourselves, not just I'm always had a problem demanding higher levels of play from other people. I kind of like, I want you to have fun. I want you to play the way you want to. But at the same time, it's not necessarily the way I want to play. Okay, so this game, it's going to be the way we want to play, hopefully, considering there's primarily, with Trav and I being the primary movers on it. So that means that, we're expected to, as we keep saying, bring our A game, be attentive, be involved. Give lots of feedback to the GM, and hopefully do the kind of adventures that, as gamers, we always wanted to do, but for one reason or another didn't happen, So, and when it comes to space games, a lot of times that's caused by the, I don't want to use the word limitations because that's a negative view.
Parameter. Let's type parameters.
Well, yeah, the parameters. I was going to say the restrictions, but it's also negative. Yeah, the parameters that are in the game. So specifically, we're talking about the game setting for our play. So, Jonathan, why don't you start off talking about what it is, where are we going to be adventuring in?
So the setting I had in mind is one that I've kind of been developing in the back of my head for a couple years now. It is a far future, but not incredibly far future. I'm thinking maybe 2300s, 2400s. And it takes place strictly within our own solar system. There's no FTL, there's no interstellar travel. It's all at home. But it is a solar system that has been heavily, heavily colonized by humanity, with outposts on almost every solid surface you can find. And then tons and tons and tons of orbital habitats around them.
So apparently when we couldn't find a solid surface, we made up our own. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, yeah. Oh, well, we've used up all of Io here. Let's just build an orbital habitat around it. Hey, look, that asteroid looks pretty nice. Let's hollow it out.
I'm reminded of the whole thing when you don't have, you know, at home, when you can't make your own store-bought, it's fine. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got surface at home.
Aww. Yeah. I want to go to McDonald's at home.
I'm seeing a moon made out of silly putty at this point.
Oh, Lord.
They say, we have surface at home.
The idea came to me as I was watching the videos of Isaac Arthur, who I've mentioned on this podcast before.
Please repeat, because I don't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a YouTuber who does videos about science and futurism, but he describes, you know, futuristic technology. He tries to keep it to what we know of the laws of physics at this moment. So he doesn't usually talk about, you know, faster than light travel in his essays. He usually talks about, well, you know, you could have a generation ship that flies out to Alpha Centauri. But he's often described, you know, one of his favorite comments is like orbital habitats, specifically like O'Neill cylinders, which are just basically big long tubes that you put land and dirt inside and you spin it to generate gravity and you have people living inside a tube in space as a habitat.
I remember we looked that up on a previous episode a couple months back. Yes.
Yep. And so I got to thinking, because, you know, as he described how many of these we could conceivably, you know, put in space, I was like, that would be a great setting because you could have all these different habitats owned by all these different nations and corporations and private individuals. You could have a field day with just these hundreds and hundreds of hundreds of effectively, you know, tiny little isolated cities in space, each with its own, you know, culture and issues and adventures you could have on it. And so then when I got dragooned into this job, that was the first thing that came to mind. It was like, oh, we want to do a space game. Oh, well, I've got
one. No, I prefer this term, lovingly conscripted by your co-host. Yeah, let's try it. Yeah.
I still like Shanghai.
You know, when you say things like there's something on every rock or pebble or whatever that might be out in space, all right, it's not like they're covered with them except for certain places like, you know, the bigger asteroids.
What I imagined is like, yeah, no, it's most of it is going to be focused around Earth and the Moon. Those are the closest, so those where most of the first habitats will be.
Well, I'm surprised, actually. Yes, I can see how there'd be lots on the Moon, but I wouldn't think that the adventures would actually center around that.
No, the adventures, as in my mind, would feature mostly in the Oort cloud, which is kind of like the frontier.
Well, yeah, it's the furthest. Really far out there.
Exactly. Yeah. It is the furthest, but there's also so much stuff out there to mine and explore.
All right. So basically, you know, the campaign area is going to be the Oort cloud all the way in. So of course it makes the entire solar system. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Okay. So, all right, so I have a question, which before we get to some of the more technical issues, well, a couple of actually sociological issues. One is that are there aliens? Are there, Trav, do you want there to be aliens?
From what I am seeing of this setting, and of course I'm still going by the, and I know we're not using OGL, but I'm still going by the progress levels and the general reach of technology. If we have no FTL, no artificial gravity except by centrifugal effects or acceleration and fusion drives, I would see at the very most genetic manipulation where we might have some slight speciation. Oh, we have people who are rigged for light gravity and people who are rigged for heavy gravity and, you know, maybe aquatic and some speciation. I would not, so everybody would still be from baseline human. But I'm not seeing extrasolar entities coming in and take us to your leader. No.
Well, I mean, I think that would be really cool to have that. And it could be there. I mean, it doesn't, you know, remember, science that's advanced enough is basically, you know, like magic in the sense that we can't benefit from it. There can be science that's too advanced for us to deal anything with, at least in the setting that we're talking about. in the time scale that we're talking about. So a number of options here are, of course, there is the aliens who come in and they just basically, you know, they're like researchers. They want to, you know, they want to observe us. Okay. And they may have all kinds of thing, but they're not going to give us any of their tech. They want to keep us pristine. So, you know, they don't want, you know, they don't want to, they're like Diana Fossey, you know, comes in and looks at the orangutans and the gorillas. She doesn't like give any of them like
a gorillas, you know, in the mist, Sigourney Weaver. Got it. Yeah.
You know, she doesn't like teach them how to use hammer and nails or anything like that. You know, she's like, we want to see what you're doing, you know, what your society is like. And, you know, we're not going to give you anything.
I would think then if they're that good, we wouldn't even know they were there. Yeah.
Well, that's an option, but at the same time, the gorillas obviously know that
Diane
Fossey is there. So she could have done all of her observations from, you know, 100 feet away with telephoto lenses and boom mics, but she didn't, she went in. So that's one option. Okay. Second option is the cryogenically frozen capsules, you know, the wreck of a ship, and all you get basically, it's like, you know, there's an interstellar ship out there, but something happened to it, it exploded or whatever, and so a pod of these aliens essentially come to Earth and or to the moon, or some other place, they get captured, and when they go in there and put feed power to it, you know, the pods open up and consume themselves, leaving just the aliens. So now you have aliens, okay? But they may have knowledge, but they're probably like everybody else, where they're not like, oh yeah, I can just totally like recreate our technological level. You know, more like, oh yeah, that's possible. Or, you know,
they have ideas of what can be done.
It's like sending yourself back to the turn of the century, and by that I mean the 20th century, not the, you know, this most current one. And you say, oh yeah, you know, these handheld things are called telephones, you know, and they're like, well, we have a telephone, it's connected by wires, and it sounds really scratchy. Well, it's getting better. You know, you need to, you know, do a few things, you know. But and they're like, well, how do we do that? I don't know.
You know, I don't make them. I just
use them. I'm a VTuber. I'm a YouTuber. Okay. I'm an influencer. I don't actually know how to do anything. You know, kind of. So I'm just saying, there's that option for the aliens to be like that. Okay. What I'm saying is that they don't actually bring any real technology, or they bring a couple of pieces of technology, and you know, that's how we. Or they could be something inimical. Where, for example, is that any of you guys seen the movie Life Force?
Heard of it, never got around seeing it.
Okay, this is a very family unfriendly movie.
Okay.
All right. There's a lot of vampires, but they're energy vampires. They basically come and suck the life force out of you. And that's how they feed. One of the versions of Stargate, Atlantis, they had
The
energy vampires that did basically the same thing. Okay, so you know, and they're on a ship that basically it floats into the solar system. You know, in a particular movie, what it was is that it was actually in orbit around a comet. Okay, it was from a long time ago, and so the ship itself was mostly inoperable. But what it did was when it got near. To the Earth, the comet came near the Earth, or another planet that might have had a civilization, then they would come down to the Earth somehow. In the movie case, they literally found some of these bodies, you know, and they brought them to Earth, and they basically sucked power, you know, energy off of people, turned into these beautiful humanoids. Okay, mostly it was shape-changing. And so at that point, they started just taking out London, essentially. The idea was to get enough energy, feed it to the queen. Then the queen basically goes back up into space, goes into the ship, and basically goes back to sleep for another 100,000 years. So you could have, like, like energy vampires, which solves a lot of problems about having to eat and drink and all that stuff in space, you know. And they could be a kind of a marauder in there. So they do exist, but they are not trying to communicate us in any reasonable way. We're cattle, and their ship is, you know, you can't get near the ship because, first of all, if you could find it, you know, then you'd probably just want to blow it up to get rid of them. And secondly is that they would defend it. So, but they don't have the means of leaving the solar system. You know, that may, maybe sometime in the far future or the near future, another ship with FTL capability would show up and collect them. But in the meantime, they're just basically out in space. But they, this energy that they collect can be used to power their ship to fly around the solar system. But when it does that, of course, there's less energy for them to survive on. So then they have to go and prey on more people. Anyways, I think that's a cool alien concept I would like to include. You know, that way you end up with the idea that there is alien intelligences out there. You know, they're not friendly to us, at least, you know, and but it doesn't like change everything in the sense of technology.
Yeah, and as I said, I'm offering the idea of speciation through genetic engineering because this type of tech level, which, as I said, I go back to OGL terms, it's how I'm wired. I see this as PL6, which it's fusion age. We don't have anti-grav stuff yet. Genetic engineering is just starting. You're going to be getting, as I said, maybe some light G people, some heavy G people, maybe a water breather, or maybe,
really,
you know.
Really starting to play around with that genetic alteration.
Right,
what
yeah.
What about cyborgization?
I was going to ask about cybernetics too. How would that be going?
It doesn't sound like we've reached the tipping point. You know the.
I see this being like you could probably have some simple prosthesis, but you might not have like whole body, you know, RoboCop conversion. Maybe.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to have full cyberization where it's the brain, the spinal cord go in this robot shell. No, I would see prosthetics, maybe eyes or ears for medical replacement. Like, you lost it in the space battle of 2153. Yeah, we'll get you a new eye, but it's definitely cybernetic looking. I mean,
right. Yeah. Well, there's definitely been a lot of, you know, cases where, for example, you know, you replace your forearm with a general purpose tool that could get attached all kinds of useful things. Mm-hmm. Usually, the ship's engineer or its helper would be that. So you could basically, you know, I could use, you know, with slight variations, basically it's just like a skill tool, you know, here's the plasma cutter, here's the driller, here's the whatever, with maybe some minor fabrication ability, you know, built into it as well, so that, you know, we can, you can, you know, basically, you know, a person could make stuff. And then, of course, if you were a soldier, you'd use the same thing to hold a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, or if you were a pilot of the ship, you know, how much, you know, you might be able to plug into the ship's systems to a certain extent.
Yeah, that would be, you know, we'd be getting into computers in the brain and all that. Yeah, we'd have to determine just how far are we. It wouldn't definitely be transhuman. It would be the very beginnings of transhumanism where...
Right.
Yeah, like no nanotech cybernetics. You know.
Well, even if you just have like a pack that's, you know, that you wear, okay, that basically has it's an information, you know, a media server, okay, that essentially you can, you know, you can ask questions to, you know, it has a, you know, and answer questions for you, and maybe even throw up, you know, either in your brain, in your visual cortex, or in some kind of heads up display for you, you know, useful information that will allow you to do whatever it is you're trying to do.
I would also see with this level of technology, most cyberization would be either due to you work for a corporation, they put it in you, and you now work for them, and, you know, you're trying to pay it off, or you got it due to military service, either as part of the assignment, and, yeah, you now are this, you know, somewhat cyberized person now in the private sector, or due to medical damage. Yeah, he's got that prosthetic leg. He limps a little, but he's good.
Yeah, or you got black market gear.
Oh, yeah, there we go. So, not quite cyberpunk, but it would be enough to... Okay, yeah, he went to that one habitat over there where, you know, things are a little skeezy, and he got that... Yeah, don't mind the occasional spark that comes out of his knee. He's good.
Yeah, what about brain uploadings and or restore or backups? Which would have to be combined with either cloning or basically nanobot healing.
In my head, I had it in my head that they haven't got the full like cloning body replacement. The mind machine interface, like, you know, plugging yourself to be the pilot of the ship, is probably rudimentary, although they're probably exploring deeper options.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, like, there probably isn't any, you know, like, recorded minds or anything like that yet.
So if you die, you die.
Yo, so yeah.
Okay. So that's there. The just want to make sure. So there's no coming back from the dead if they get you into a vat of liquid hydrogen or something.
If you get spaced, you're probably dead, and you're gonna probably stay dead.
Okay.
Probably.
But most of the parts that you might, you know, lose, they can replace with prosthetics.
Well, see, if the cloning, if there's the cloning, you know, it's like, you know, how we had Blade Runner. Yeah, this guy's growing eyes in a vat there at a kiosk. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, but they were able to fully construct a being that way.
Well, yeah.
And Jonathan's, you know, saying we can't do that.
I would say, you know, and to my mind, I would think by this point in time that they probably do have cloning. They just don't have forced growth cloning. So, like,
it would take years for a clone to be fully grown to adult, and
And then again, they don't have like the mind transfer technology. But like, if you know, turns out you had a bad heart, you know, if you're willing to wait like 20 years, they might get you a new one.
Yeah,
maybe closer to 10 or 12.
Well, it should be like 8, because as they said in Chicago Hope, there's few things as great in this world than an 8-year-old heart.
But yeah, they could clone your cells and grow you a new organ. You just literally have to wait for it to get grown.
Yeah.
For however long it takes.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would take a while.
Yeah.
If you cannot speed the metabolic process along, then
That's what I'm thinking.
I would, you know, I personally like the idea where they take a heart that is... it's just someone's heart, okay? And they basically strip all the cells off of it, leaving only the cartilage structure behind. And then they basically rebuild the heart, putting tissue, but it's from you.
That would be quicker, yeah.
Yeah, it should be a lot quicker, you know?
You just got to get some stem cells on there.
Yeah.
Or you revert cells to be stem cells.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I could see that happening, you know, because the... When, you know, the whole Picard, they gave him an artificial heart. I'm like, really? And that, in those, you know, with the transporter technology that they have, they just didn't give him a brand new heart.
Yeah, that's the thing. The Duratanium heart. Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, they should be able to clone. Well, see, they got all bent out of shape with clones and genetics due to the augments. I can see where they went the cybernetic route. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you got to draw the line somewhere. I mean, come on. You know, we're not doing that technology, but in Voyager, they literally was replacing Neelix's lungs by holograms.
Okay. Yeah. Solid light hologram heart. Yeah.
Solid light holograms was doing the replacing Neelix's lungs.
Yeah.
So anyways, we're not talking about that. I want real lungs, you know. So there might be some organs that you can't do because, like I said, there is no armature, and there's no thing for them to build on. It literally, you know, like your, not your kidneys, but your pancreas is a good example.
Yeah,
it's very mushy pancreas. You know, fortunately, liver. You know, you could lose like 80% of your liver, and it'll still keep doing the job, and it'll regenerate.
Yeah.
So the liver is actually a good one for this kind of technology. But yeah, the pancreas. Is probably one of the worst ones for doing this kind of work. So, anyways, and of course the brain.
Yeah,
I was going to say probably neural tissue.
Yeah, well, the brain is even though it's mostly carbohydrates and stuff, it's still pretty mushy inside. So, yeah. So anyways, all right. Mushy. So we got, there's no brain uploading, but we do have prosthetics, but not full body cybernization. But we do have organ cloning. So you might have to take a prosthetic replacement, you know, for a long time until...
Yeah.
Here's your loaner lung.
Until it finally gets done. You kind of can go in and get it fixed, you know. But then, of course, you know, there'll probably have better anti-rejection drugs.
Yeah.
So maybe, mm-hmm. or maybe just because you live in a spaceship, you pretty much say, hey, you know, I'm never going to leave this thing, so I'm going to, you know, we're going to keep it like squeaky clean so I don't have to worry about picking up germs. But I think that's not a realistic point of view. Unless you're in a spaceship where only you are in the spaceship, you know, a la, you know, Mr. House from Fallout 4.
Yeah.
You're constantly going to be coming into contact with masses of people who've been cooking up their own versions of germs. So, yeah, I think you're going to have to have a very robust system. And that means that probably it's going to be really hard for you to have donor organs from other people.
And especially considering, again, that this is like a setting full of, you know, hundreds of isolated cities, so to speak, with no real contact except from, you know, the ships coming in and out. And yeah, that some might be traveled enough that they're getting a good amount of spread of germs and can build an immunity. But what about some of these far off isolated communes that haven't seen anybody else touch down in, like, you know, generations?
Well, okay, yeah. Is there going to be universal healthcare, or is it this going to be one of these, you know, pay as you go with the repo man chasing you across the solar system?
I could see both being possible. It just kind of depends on who you work for. It probably wouldn't be universal across the system.
Yeah, if you're having to get your medical benefits through whatever employment you get, otherwise you'd be paying cash or whatever, or having to go to something less reputable, we'll say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm assuming, you could tell us. I mean, are there, like, you know, people out there running a single ship with maybe a couple guys, a small family unit that's out there mining an asteroid, you know, and so they don't have any health care except, you know, when someone is hurt, they come back and they just have to pay for it.
I imagine so. Yeah, that's one thing. I was like, I imagine this is, there is so much stuff in the Oort cloud. There is so many potential mining targets, and then there's also the salvage for the closer in system, because, you know, habitats break down all the time, and it's sad people die, but, you know, we can use those metals.
I personally think that's way too gritty. I mean, you know, people have to, you know, it's like, okay, my wife is dying, you know, I'm going to turbocharge the engines to get my ship over to Ganymede, okay? But when you get there, it's like, oh, okay, so I got there and now I have to sell my ship and to pay for her medical care, and now I'm just stuck on Ganymede. Okay, that could happen to any of us, all right, as players. So I'm just saying is that I would like there to be some, you know, universal healthcare. Okay, maybe the really big things, like, you know, like cloning or other things like that. I could see where that, you know, would be something you might have to pay extra or get hooked in with the right kind of people for that. But I mean, I think you should be able to, if you get sick or hurt, I think you should be able to go to some place and have them fix you up and give you prosthetics, you know, necessary for your recovery.
Yeah.
Without you basically having to put yourself in hock to some corporation for the rest of your life.
I could easily see, like, this would be far enough in the future that, yeah, certain medical treatments would probably be fairly easy, especially once you have fusion power available to you and presumably almost all the water you need. At least if you're, you know, close to Earth and can get the, you know, water fairly easily.
There's tons of water out in space.
Oh, yeah. It's just getting it.
It's not that hard.
It's not that hard.
It's zero G.
Yeah. It's getting it, but that's the thing. But like, yeah, I imagine there's a lot of medical treatments that would be fairly easy and almost no cost.
The further you go out, the more water there's going to be because, you know, the sun isn't like, you know, ripping it off the surface and, you know, the solar wind is weaker and weaker the further out you go.
It's just the challenge of getting the water back to the central, to where it can be used.
Well, you know, that's easy to do. You just simply give it an impulse and send it on its way.
Exactly.
You know, and it may take years to get back there, but it's like, you know, the way people do their businesses, okay? You set up a chain, okay? You have this job you're working on, then there's like three jobs in the queue, and as you keep doing jobs, you get more jobs to put into the queue. As long as they're willing to wait as long as you take to do it, it's fine. You know, so I'm saying when it comes to supplies and things like that, I suspect there's going to be, you know, there's going to be containers of whatever it is that have little impulse engines on the ends of it, you know, and getting it back to wherever it's needed. And of course, that gives the opportunity for things like piracy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, they're all going to have, because first of all, they're all going to have little emitters on them saying, here I am, this is who I am.
And this is where I'm going.
And this is, this is my heading and stuff like that. And, you know, because otherwise they would be navigational problems.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want, so there's going to be some piracy out there. But of course, you know, are the pirates probably not going to be hitting up on, you know, a big canister of a couple of, you know, 5 or 10 tons of water.
Probably not.
They're probably going to be more interested in, you know, lithium or some other more important metal.
Some rare earth metal.
Yeah.
Something like, or finished goods, which are always more valuable.
Oh, we need to smuggle medicine or we need to get guns or we need to get medicine or we need to get, some other commodity that will... Yeah.
And that would also give a reason for the more valuable items to be sent by ship, because that way you know that you're going to get there fast. And secondly, there's going to be somebody watching out for them the entire length.
Somebody who can, you know, act as a last line of defense.
Well, listen.
So if you're going to be having a supply convoy, it's going to be heavily armed, both the ships themselves, and they're probably going to have escorts.
Yeah, I am going to be I am going to be a certain star captain by the name of Han Solo. That if pirates start coming up, you know, I'm going to be dropping cargo. I am not going to die, just, you know, to keep this safe. Unless, of course, the cargo happens to be people, in which case it's different. You know, it's you don't just like drop those off the ship. But anyways, okay. All right. So I would, like I say, that I would like universal healthcare, and like I said, lots automated shipments of minerals and supplies from their production centers out in the solar system.
So they're all going to be dumb AI piloted ships where, oh, we have to do this shipment, so we're not going to risk people where it's just.
And well, especially if they're, you know, if it's not a rush job, it's just, you know, slowly gathering up more resources from the Oort cloud, you know, it can be, you don't want to have somebody piloting a ship for 5, 10, 20 years at slow speeds just to.
Right. Because if you're shipping, like, let's say, 1,000 tons of something, okay, from the Oort cloud into the inner, it's gonna, you know, that's a lot of impulse to get that going. You know, so you may just say, hey, you know, with what, you know, we're gonna send it at this speed, and you're going to, you know, and that, which means that when it gets there, there's gonna be certain planets or that are going to be moving in the right direction, so that you basically you're not going against each other. So basically, the final collapse of energy matching up to the celestial body is going to be profitable. So
they are going to plot their routes so they could do, I guess, like slingshot type stuff to propel them further throughout the system.
Well, they could do that, or just simply, like I said, if you get it going at a certain speed, but it's still going to take a couple of years for it to get into the inner solar system, you're going to aim it in such a way that it comes, it basically is going to match along the path of some celestial body, Earth, Venus, whatever, so that it can be then captured and processed or transferred to other vehicles that are going to go to, you know, closer in. You know, and of course, really large vessels like that, kind of like the refinery, you know, the Nostromus, is this ginormous thing that is, they're dragging behind them as they go through, you know, from one end of the, you know, from one star to another. Nobody is going to go and try to get, you know, petroleum off of it, because it's A, too big, you know, to deal with. You know, you can't steal that, all right? It's just too massive.
Yeah,
right. You might show up and, okay, yeah, we're going to steal some, you know, how many tons of iron ore do you want to steal off of this thing?
Right.
You know, you might grab a couple of pods off of it, you know, and just let the rest keep going, you know, assuming that the ship's automated defenses don't protect you. You protect itself or whatever, but you don't want to waste people on a 2 or 3 year journey like that. You know, that's so, you know, I'm just saying there's different ways of protecting against piracy. And like I said, pirates are always going to go after the high values, you know, low mass objects if they can. So,
the expensive,
I think there should be pirates.
Yeah.
I want there to be pirates, because
you gotta pirates have pirates. Are, if it's a space game.
Yeah,
like pirates, you know, are basically, you know, they're a lot of times they're ideologically pirates. Okay, you know, we don't like this corporation, we're going to steal from this corporation.
We're
going
to stick it to the man, as it were,
and we're going to either make ourselves rich, or we're going to go and sell the stuff at a lower price to the people who really need it, our buddies, especially the people that are providing us with a port. You know.
Yeah.
So it's not warfare. If it was warfare, then it would be they would be not pirates. They would be privateers.
Yeah.
But they're still pirates. They're just, you know, selling to the underworld, so to speak. You know, and maybe their friend, you know, getting supplies for their friends.
They could be Robin Hood. They could be Blackbeard.
The black market, because lots of people who are in the black market are neither Robin Hood nor are they Genghis Khan. They're just people trying to make money. Doing it as cheaply as possible, and stealing is a really good way of lowering the cost of your items.
Hmm.
So you still have the transport cost, but the production cost is now gone.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of pirates. Like I said, there's ideological pirates, you know, and then I think as separate from the concept of raiders. And again, raiders are people that are attacking for the purpose of causing damage. That, you know, you're trying to disrupt somebody's business because you don't like them. And there could be corporate raiders, you know, and there could be religious raiders and such. And I like the idea that there could be, as you mentioned, Jonathan, there could be religious communes out on some of these planetoids or rocks out in the Oort cloud, you know, communing with, you know, nature away from the corruption of Earth.
Yeah. We don't like the way our government works, so we're just going to go somewhere else.
The only law is the law of physics.
And we're going to use it to get as far away as we can.
Oh, no, I see in this, you're going to have a libertarian commune. You're going to have one, you know, for every type of political ideology, and just, okay, you got to abide by their rules, but hey, they may do this, that, or the other, but they give real good deals for fuel or whatever, and so it's like, yeah, I'm going to have to put up with these, you know, I don't agree with them, but they got some of the best fuel prices in the system. Okay, we're going to have to,
Or, you know, these guys, they're kooks, but you know what? They have the best ale in the solar system.
Yeah.
And I know I can take it back home and sell it for a good pretty penny.
Yeah. So we're going to have those, you know, kind of off-kilter habitats, or habs as you call them, that just are going to be This
legendary rocket juice.
Yeah, it's going to be the line from Farscape. You know, believe beneath all this blue stuff, Dargo, pure aviation fuel. And he sucks it down. Yeah. But no, I'm seeing just drop a culture of some type, put it in a habitat. Okay, this would be an all Islamic, or this would all be Shinto, or this would all be, you know, you
it's,
have
it's the ultimate planets of hats, but just not planets. They're habitats, habs of hats.
Yeah.
There we go. I like that. Habs of hats.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, sometimes, you know, you bring people chemical feedstocks and you get there, you find out they're using it to make, you know, chemical weapons to use against the other habitat that they're in disagreement
with. Yeah. That's...
But that's, you know.
Hey, can you deliver this for us? Don't open it, but deliver it. Whatever you do, do not open it.
Yeah, see, that's another thing. You're going to be having, there might be that problem of inter-hab warfare, either a Cold War or, and probably a lot of it's going to be Cold Wars because they're not going to want to disrupt everything of the solar system's economy and commerce, because then you're going to be having corporate and military people coming in, you know, like the Monty Python Bobby. Stop that, you know.
I do see this very
much.
The
most common way of doing that would be just simply sabotaging the equipment of your opposing faction.
Yeah. Oh, your radar's gone down? I guess you can't see that small little asteroid heading towards your solar panels. Oh, that's going to suck for you guys. Oh, well.
Well, you know, just you take off and you just drop it out of an airlock, you know, at the right trajectory.
Yeah.
We didn't do that. It must have been
celestial motion. Hey, that's an act of God. Yeah, sorry, your insurance isn't going to cover that.
We can't track every little piece of junk out here. Bad luck for you. So yeah, I'm sure there's going to be lots of saber rattling and acts of terrorism and such that's being done.
Certainly a lot of
and certainly the shields aren't going to help.
Not greatly. Not for big things.
Yeah.
From what you said, those shields are basically just to keep
like tiny
micrometeors and all that.
Micrometeors and radiation. That's what I've envisioned them being, all they're really good for. So, yeah, you don't have to worry about the cosmic rays cooking you inside your hab. But, yeah, if somebody throws a big enough rock at you and you can't detect it in time, yeah, you dead.
Well, because I'm seeing also you got these small debris lasers handle bigger debris and often used as last resort anti-ship weapons. Yeah, like a point defense system where anything gets within a certain thing that's not in the computer's profile of, no, that's a ship, we don't want that shot, but that's an asteroid. Yeah, blow that to bits so it'll just be dust.
Yeah, and of course, if you are a ship, but your, like, you know, IFF system is down, you don't want to get too close until you can somehow fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you guys probably haven't seen the anime, but there's an anime which is about people whose job is to go and deal with junk that's in orbit around the Earth, and one of the biggest things that they say is the worst thing you can do is blow up junk, because it just makes smaller, more undetectable junk, which is just as dangerous. Because the way the anime starts off with is that there's this space shuttle to the moon, and it's, you know, there's this nice, you know, a la 2001, you know, flying its little way across space, and just a hailstorm just goes in and just peppers it and takes out, you know, the passenger compartment. Lots of people die, and that's when Earth says, we've got to have an organization that'll clean up this stuff, or at least make sure that, you know, it does the least amount of damage. And that's who these people work for. Their job is primarily to go and get rid of junk, but, you know, as best they can.
That's why I envisioned it being lasers that are the defense system, because you don't want to leave more junk from like spent bullets or anything like that. So the idea being it cooks the debris.
Well, unless it literally cooks it in the gas. Okay,
well, that's the idea, because again, it's meant to,
it's a lot of energy, sir.
These are meant to be high powered, they're just small. They're meant to handle small debris, not, you know, micrometeors, but, you know, like something, you know, fist sized, maybe even on up to, what am I thinking of? Like maybe the size of a small car. But yeah, they are powerful enough to vaporize these these objects.
Well, those are pretty powerful ship's weapons then.
Yeah.
Oh, they are, but that's why they're also not very big, because they're not meant to be taking out. They're not meant to take out ships, but they can if they need to.
That's a thing that I'm seeing that they could do, because let's say you use these lasers to take out something, you're going to be on emergency power for a while. Yeah, that habitat over there that's getting under our skin and undercutting us, yeah, move that big asteroid over, and while they're rebuilding their power, we can come in and do something else, because the lasers will be spent.
Again, this is an era where fusion power is common, and
yeah,
most of these habs are the size of a city, so if they've got a few of these, you know, generators ready to go, and they've added capacitors,
yeah.
I mean, again, that is a tactic, but it wouldn't be just move one thing over. It'd be, you know, let's shower them with hail for like a good week, and now they're on empty.
Yeah, that's what I would mean. It'd be something about, you know, just do it, but that would still be a tactic where, mm-hmm. yeah, we just deplete their, they're so busy firing and, you know, running down their energy with these very powerful lasers that, yeah, there will be a decrease in energy. Okay, and we come in this way and get them. Yeah.
In regards to, fusion engines and things like that, basically, I don't want us to have to nickel and dime about the amount of fuel we're carrying.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not too interested in that myself.
I mean, unless we take damage and that causes that kind of a problem, I don't think we should have to worry about, can we go and do this job, or we have enough fuel to get there.
Yeah. What I imagined was the bigger issue would be like speed, like trying to get from one place to another as fast as possible, which is why I had that these, you know, shields, they do have an upper limit. So the faster you go, the more you risk hitting a piece of debris that your shield doesn't have time to deflect. So the faster you go, the more you risk catastrophic damage just from going too fast. Plus, again, acceleration is your only source of gravity. So if you push it to 2G, you're putting 2G's worth of, you know, effort on your body for however long the trip takes. You want to try for 5G, you'll get there faster, but...
From the recent adventure of trying to escape Earth to Mars, Mars is between 30 million and 50 million miles away from Earth, depending upon its orbit. Of course, under most conditions. And so as a result, by doing the 1G acceleration with the flip over at midpoint and then accelerating the opposite direction for the other half, it was a 3-day trip to Mars.
And that sounds good to me. I like that sound. That sounds about right.
Well, I'm just saying that's how that's the math that I did worked out that way. So we
and yeah, I would be looking at that math as well, because I'm also, again, because I'm wanting to base this in the Oort cloud, that's, if you need to come back home to Earth,
a lot further away. Yeah, that's not a 3-day journey.
Yeah,
that's why you're going to be spending, you're going to be traveling. Once you get to a spot, you're going to be traveling around that area primarily. But yeah, going from the Oort cloud all the way to Earth, that's probably going to be a couple month journey. Yeah.
Months.
Unless you're willing to kick up to higher Gs and maybe put some strain on your body and cargo.
2 Gs over a month would probably have some very bad effects on you. Unless you're offering acceleration drugs. Because,
or special design.
Because in it was something of gravity, the one that took place on a planet that was like basically long. It was kind of spindle shaped. And the closer you were to the middle, the more gravity there was. And at the very, very point of it, it was like 2 Gs. And so there was a human at a base there trying to get the locals, okay, to carry this, this sensor, as far down as possible to the main part. And he was sitting in a membrane floating inside of water, and the water was supposed to be supporting him. Hal Clement wrote it. It was, something of gravity. I can't remember the exact name. I'm sure our listeners are going, "You idiot!" but that to me does, you know, it's like, okay, so you could be vertical and it would give you the same effect as laying down, but you still, you know, that much gravity on you laying down. So I guess, you know, if you were like 150 pounds and you turned into 300 pounds, you know, it, laying down, it would, that wouldn't be too hard on you probably, but you know, it's just, I'm just thinking that you go months of it. I'm not sure that would work out too well. Most people are more worried about the low G aspect of it, which we're going to kind of ignore because, like I said, if anything, you'd want to move around at a 1G acceleration so everything is copacetic.
Yeah. What I imagined is like, you know, it, when the ship is, you know, docked, if it's a mining or a salvage vessel, once it's in space, it might be doing a lot of operations in zero G. But if it's, you know, a cargo vessel or something like that, it's probably spending most of its time on the move anyway. It's probably going to be at 1G most of its time. The only time there might be is again that like that changeover at the halfway point.
Right. Or, you know, they might initially have like a big boost just to get it going, you know.
Just get it like a little bit extra acceleration up front.
It's just, I mean, and there's always the possibility of things like solar sails too and such, you know.
Yeah, that's something else that I was thinking. That those are really good for intra-system travel.
But it's no good coming back in.
Yeah.
Well, they're not meant for leaving the system.
Well, no, I mean, you turn around and start heading toward the system, now the sun's pushing against you. Okay, what I've seen them do in books is that they used a laser to, like, you know, a wide fanning beam laser on the solar sails to push them back until the sun got bright enough that they weren't getting any acceleration anymore. You know, it was, and that was only because they had one form of propellant, you know, was the sails. They didn't have fusion engines. They had fusion generators that could produce electricity and power, which is why they were able to use this laser to get themselves back. But, you know, it's their main form of transportation was, in fact, you know, the solar sails. So it was great leaving the solar system, harder to come back. But then you only tried to get back to like someplace like maybe Neptune or one of the big gas giants, because then you could transfer your over to a ship that actually had fusion drives and such. Again, you'd have to work out the math on that, Jonathan, as to...
Because I remember one short story I read years ago about a pilot who was having to transmit a message from like one end of a system to another, and he had to do it as fast as possible. So he basically did a 10G burn, and I think it was like it only took him a day. But the idea being that it so wrecked his body being at 10Gs for almost 24 hours. That was like the whole tension of the story was like, will he survive a day at 10G?
That's also similar to the Green Hills of Earth, where you had the guy basically he's trying to get the ship, you know, back to safety, but he's also being irradiated by the drive, because what happened was is that the shielding between the drive and the rest of the ship broke. So the engineering compartment is not livable for long, but he had to get in there and fix things up enough so the ship could fly, you know, the engines would work and get them heading back to where they could find safety and rescue. So, yeah. Oh, there's lots of terrible stories like that, but very noble, you know, and the guy wrote a couple more verses to the Green Hills of Earth while he was doing it. Heinlein, you know, guy knew his stuff.
Ah.
He's been dead a while. For our listeners, may like, who's this Heinlein guy? And I'm like, you know, really go read some books that.
That's when you just look at, you remember that old Starship Troopers movie? He wrote the book based on it. That might help.
There's a lot
them.
Of really good writers who are no longer with us. And, you know, don't limit yourself to just, you know, current media or, you know, books that are written by up and coming, you know, new writers, which I need to do because, you know, as I said, most of my favorite writers are now, you know, gone to join the choir celestial. But I'm just saying, but don't forget them either, because they did a lot of, because back when, you know, they were really trying to think about what we're talking about, you know, they did a lot of work on that. They got together with engineers and stuff, and they worked out some amazing scenarios.
Half of them were engineers themselves.
Yeah. Well,
right. Yeah.
A lot of engineers said we wrote science fiction stories to pay for, to pay for beer money. You know, they were already structural engineers, and they said, well, you know, these guys are willing to, you know, to take our stories if we, you know, if we write them well enough, so we'll do that, and then we can basically, you know, pay for beer.
And some of them ended up paying for their retirement.
Very few.
I said some. I didn't say a lot.
Like all things, you know, it's like being like an influencer on YouTube, okay? You know, there's people out there that make $120,000 every time they post something. And then there's everybody else who is like, you know, trying to just make maybe a couple hundred dollars a month, you know?
Yeah.
He says, we on Gaming on the Frontier have never made any money off of this podcast.
No.
And
no.
I don't think I've even gotten a convention badge out of this.
Probably not. But we've done it for the love of it and because we wanted to get a lot of really interesting ideas out there for you to explore. And we hope that you, as we've said so many times, we hope you take these ideas and use them, because that's our real payback for what we do, not money. But it would be nice to get money. I've resisted the temptation to put commercials into the podcast, because there are places out there that says, we'll take your podcast and we'll just insert commercials every so often. and so you have to listen to them, you know, or stop listening to the podcast. And I just never... it would have been great to have a sponsor that was like what we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've done a lot of promos of other podcasts as well on this particular podcast. So, but not for a while, but we're still doing that. But anyways, okay. So that was the fusion and that kind of stuff. Anyways, thanks everybody for listening to us. We've had a lot of fun doing this, and we'll be doing more of this in the future, but you'll have to wait until then.
This is Bruce Sheffer saying there are a million, million worlds out there, so go explore them.
And this is Trav. There's a reason why it's called gaming. It's for having fun.
Gaming on the Frontier podcast is wholly owned by its hosts. It is released under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. No commercial reproduction, and any use of any element of the podcast must be attributed to the Gaming on the Frontier podcast.
Hi, this is Trav from the Travcast. Listen to me Tuesday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on listen.dementiaradio.org/8027.